All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles Show. Just me tonight and some rum, and of course Zexy here. And we've got quite a few articles. They were received a little later in the week, but that's perfectly fine because it gives me just enough time where I'm not just overburdened by the day's stories or the week's stories, whatever you want to call them. And let's get started. Okay, we've got one from the Wall Street Journal. It says, U.S. troops have been deployed for almost in Taiwan for at least a year. Oh, hold on. Let's find out more about this one, guys. Washington. A U.S. Special Operations Unit contingent of Marines have been secretly operating in Taiwan to train military forces there, U.S. officials said, part of efforts to shore up the island's defenses as concern regarding potential Chinese aggression mounts. So we've already got troops over there in Taiwan to defend against China. Ooh, we're already ahead of this Chinese, like... I mean, we know we've been fighting a Chinese Cold War for a while now. There's definitely no doubt about it. We've had slight microaggressions. Ironically, we've had slight microaggressions against China, you know, for a little bit now. But we love cheap Chinese stuff, like my little Mistress Mari figure that I'm going to buy when I get paid again. Yeah, like I need that like a hole in the head, right? But, you know, cheap Chinese Wish stuff. And, oh, and they got the Hellraiser Bishoujo figure now, finally, at Wish. So I'm going to get that one, too. But, yeah, we like our cheap Chinese shit, so we're going to not, you know, poke them too hard. But, at any rate, this is about 24 members of U.S. Special Operations and Support Troops are conducting training for small units of Taiwan's ground forces, the officials said. The U.S. Marines are working with local maritime forces on small boat training. The American forces have been operating in Taiwan for at least a year, the officials said. The U.S. Special Operations deployment is a sign of concern within the Pentagon over Taiwan's tactical capabilities in light of Beijing's years-long military buildup and recent threatening moves against the island. Taiwan and U.S. officials have expressed alarm over nearly 150 flights near Taiwan in the past week by Chinese military aircraft. The Chinese aircraft have included J-16 jet fighters, H-6 strategic bombers, and Y-8 submarine spotting aircraft, and have set a record for such sorties, according to the Taiwan government. The Chinese flights, while not entering the area Taiwan defines as its airspace, have been a reminder of the Communist Party's view of Taiwan as part of China. Beijing has vowed to take control of the island by force if necessary. Top U.S. military officials testified earlier this year that Beijing is likely to try to use force in its designs on Taiwan within the next 6 years. Other officials have said China's timeline could be sooner than that. I'm thinking sooner than that. Taiwan's Defense Minister Chiao Kuo-Chang, sorry I butchered this man's name, warned Wednesday that China would be able to launch a full-scale attack on Taiwan with minimal losses by 2025. Oh, oof! I don't want the Taiwan-Chinese war in 2025, but it looks like we're gonna fucking get it. White House and Pentagon officials declined to comment on the deployment of the U.S. military force. There was no immediate response to requests for comment from Taipei. The deployment is rotational, the U.S. officials said, meaning that members of the U.S. units serve on a variable schedule. China's foreign military said in a statement that it urged the U.S. to adhere to prior agreements and cease military aid to Taiwan. China would take all necessary steps to protect its sovereignty and territorial integrity, it said, which means they want that fucking land. And they want that ocean. They have been fighting over that body of water for decades now. They want that damn South China Sea. They say, oh, it's our sea. It says South China Sea. And then all the other territories like Malaysia and Vietnam who use that sea for their food supply. Because they do a lot of fishing and that's what they eat mostly. You know, they're like, oh, what the hell are we going to do? And China doesn't fucking care. China wants to own all that shit, dude. China wants to own Vietnam. China wants to own Malaysia. China wants to own that entire fucking continent if they could. Asian media reports last year suggesting a possible U.S. Marine deployment in Taiwan were never confirmed by U.S. officials. The presence of U.S. Special Operations Forces hasn't been previously reported. The Special Operations Unit and the Marine Contingent are a small but symbolic effort by the U.S. to increase Taipei's confidence in building its defenses against potential Chinese aggression. Current and former U.S. government officials and military experts believe that deepening ties between U.S. and Taiwan military units is better than simply selling Taiwan military equipment. The U.S. has sold Taiwan billions of dollars in military hardware in recent years, but current and former officials believe Taiwan must begin to invest in its defense more heavily and smartly. Taiwan badly neglected its national defense for the first 15 years or so of this century, buying too much expensive equipment that would get destroyed in the first hours of conflict, and too little in the way of cheaper but lethal systems like anti-ship missiles, smart sea mines, and well-trained reserve and auxiliary forces that could seriously complicate Beijing's war plan, says Matt Pottinger, a distinguished visiting fellow at Stanford University's conservative Hoover Institution, who served as the deputy national security advisor during the Trump administration. Now, let's see, this one is a bit long. But Mr. Pottinger said that Taiwan's overall military spending was similar to that of Singapore, which has a quarter of Taiwan's population and doesn't have China breathing down its neck. That is true. Mr. Pottinger said that he was unaware of any American troop deployment to Taiwan. In May, Christopher Meyer, who later became Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations, told the Senate Armed Services Committee during his confirmation hearing that the U.S. should be considering strongly such a deployment of forces to help Taiwan strengthen its capabilities. Mr. Meyer, who worked at the Pentagon under the Trump administration, didn't say that Special Operations Forces already were operating there. Mr. Meyer told senators in May that American spec ops units could show forces in Taiwan to defend against an amphibious landing or train for dozens of other operations needed to defend the island. I do think that is something we should be considering strongly as we think about competition across the span of different capabilities we can apply, he said then, referring to special spec ops units. While some aspects of the U.S. deployment might be classified, it is also considered politically sensitive given the tense relations between the U.S. and China, according to U.S. officials. U.S.-China ties are strained over trade, the COVID-19 pandemic, human rights, and regional security, including the South China Sea. As I mentioned, the South China Sea. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met in Zurich on Wednesday with Yang Jiechi, China's top diplomat. China is likely to view the presence of the U.S. military forces as a violation of commitments made by Washington in past agreements. In one establishing formal relations between the U.S. and China in 1979, Washington agreed to sever formal ties with Taiwan, terminate a defense agreement, and withdraw its forces from the island. The U.S. later said it would reduce arms sales to Taiwan. A Pentagon spokesman pointed to the 1979 Taiwan Relations Act passed by Congress and said that the law provides for assessments of Taiwan's defense needs and that the threat posed by the People's People's Republic of China, or PRC. I would note that the PRC has stepped up efforts to intimidate and pressure Taiwan, including increasing military activities conducted in the vicinity of Taiwan, which we believe are destabilizing and increase the risk of miscalculation, the spokesman John Supple said in a statement. The Trump administration loosened rules that restricted contacts with Taiwan by U.S. officials, and a move that was applauded at the time by Taiwan officials. The restrictions limited U.S.-Taiwan exchanges to avoid provoking China. The Biden administration has continued with some of its predecessor's moves, sending a U.S. delegation to Taipei in April. Before leaving office, the Trump administration declassified the U.S. Strategic Framework for the Indo-Pacific, a 10-page document broadly outlining objectives for the region. A section on Taiwan says that China will take increasingly assertive steps to compel unification with Taiwan, and recommends that the U.S. enable Taiwan to develop an effective asymmetric defense strategy and capabilities that will help ensure its security, freedom from coercion, resilience, and ability to engage China on its own terms. Look who's playing world police again. The strategy also calls for a combat-credible U.S. military presence to prevent Chinese dominance in the area that includes Taiwan. The document hasn't been supplanted by a new Biden administration strategy, nor is it technically being implemented. Biden administration officials have acknowledged that there are areas of continuity between the two administrations on China policies. All right. So, they are trying to beef up China. Not China, but they're trying to beef up Taiwan against China. Again, like I said, the U.S. is playing military police, as we always do. Team America, fuck yeah. And this time we're gonna fortify Taiwan against China. Which is pretty hard to do, but not impossible. Okay. In a move we all saw coming, BBC reports that Texas abortion judge temporarily blocks enforcement of law. A federal judge. Well, all these women here are... All these women in this picture here, they're all like whales. They're really big. Like, no one is free unless they control their own body. I am a woman, not a host. And of course, they're big. They're all big girls. I don't see any skinny girls at all here. A federal judge has temporarily blocked a controversial new law in Texas that effectively bans women from having an abortion in the state. U.S. District Judge Robert Pittman granted a request by the Biden administration to prevent any enforcement of the law while its legality is being challenged. The law was put forward and approved by Republican lawmakers in Texas. The White House called the judge's ruling an important step to restoring Texas women's constitutional rights. Judge Pittman of Austin wrote a 113-page opinion that from the moment the law came into effect on the 1st of September, women have been unlawfully prevented from exercising control over their lives in ways that are protected by the Constitution. That other courts may find a way to avoid this conclusion is theirs to decide. This court will not sanction one more day of this offensive deprivation of such an important right. This is the first legal setback for Texas since the law was implemented, and state officials are expected to appeal Judge Pittman's ruling. The Biden administration took legal action after the conservative majority Supreme Court declined to prevent Texas from enacting the law. The Justice Department filed an emergency motion to block enforcement of the law while it pursues legal action. Democrat President Joe Biden has described the law as an unprecedented assault on women's rights. But Texas Governor Greg Abbott has defended it, saying the most precious freedom is life itself. The Heartbeat Act bans terminations after the detection of what anti-abortion campaigners call a fetal heartbeat, something medical authorities say is misleading. This effectively bans abortions from as early as 6 weeks into a pregnancy, at a time when most women will not be aware they are pregnant. The law also gives any individual from Texas or elsewhere, the right to sue doctors who perform an abortion past the six-week point. However, it does not allow the women who get the procedure to be sued. One doctor who admitted breaking the state's new abortion legislation has already been sued. Writing for the Washington Post, Dr. Alan Braid said he acted because I had a duty of care to this patient, as I do for all patients, and because she has a fundamental right to receive this care. I fully understand that there could be legal consequences, but I wanted to make sure Texas didn't get away with its bid to prevent this blatantly unconstitutional law from being tested, he wrote. Well, I mean, we knew that was going to happen. You know, what do I have to say, guys? We knew it was going to happen. You know, we have a strongly Democratic president. We're in a very progressive time. Yeah, it was gonna happen. I knew it was gonna happen. These women were and that was it. That's all. TFM's like, oh, we gotta take women's rights away. Well, see, that's what happens when you take women's rights away, TFM. That's what happens. Cold case team says Zodiac killer ID'd, linking him to another murder. Damn, we finally caught that bastard? The Zodiac Killer terrorized the San Francisco area in the late 1960s and has never been caught. A team of specialists who investigate cold cases says it has identified the Zodiac Killer, one of America's most prolific serial murderers who terrorized communities in the San Francisco area in the late 1960s with a series of brutal slayings and unsolvable riddles. The Case Breakers, a team of more than 40 former law enforcement investigators, journalists, and military intelligence officers, has tackled other mysteries such as the D.B. Cooper hijacking heist, the disappearance of former labor union boss Jimmy Hoffa, and other unsolved cases. The group believes the killer is responsible for slaying hundreds of miles away that was never linked to him. The Zodiac Killer has been connected to 5 murders that occurred in 68 and 69 in the San Francisco area. Unlike most serial killers, the Zodiac taunted authorities with complex ciphers and letters sent to newspapers and law enforcement. The slayings have spawned books, movies, and documentaries in the years since, and amateur and professional sleuths have pored over the case in an effort to unmask the killer. In the decades since the first murder, many potential subjects have been investigated. The Case Breakers is now saying it's identified the Zodiac Killer as Gary Francis Pulst, who passed away in 2018. The team's years of digging uncovered new forensic evidence and photos... from Pulst's darkroom. Yeah, I mean, one can say he got away with it, folks. I mean, he died in 2018, so he lived a pretty good long life, and he died getting away with murder. Wow. Hard to believe. One image features scars on the forehead of Pulst that match scars on the sketch of the Zodiac, this team said. Other clues include deciphering letters sent by the Zodiac that revealed him as the killer, said Jen Bacoltz, a former Army counterintelligence agent who works on cold cases. In one note, the letters of Pulst's full name were removed to reveal an alternate message, she told Fox News. So you've got to know Gary's full name in order to decipher these anagrams, Bacoltz said. I just don't think there's any other way anybody would have figured it out. The team believes Pulst also killed Sherry Jo Bates on October 31st of 1966 in Riverside, California, hundreds of miles south from the San Francisco area, and 2 years for the first killing linked to the Zodiac occurred. Bates, 18, was found dead in an alleyway on Riverside City College campus after her father phoned police to report her missing. The following year, authorities received a handwritten letter that led investigators to believe that the killing may be linked to the Zodiac Killer. In 2016, investigators received an anonymous typed letter from someone who admitted to writing the earlier note and said it was a sick joke. The author admitted that he was not the Zodiac Killer or the killer of Sherry Jo Bates and that he was just looking for attention, the police department said. Investigators later confirmed the author was not involved in the Bates murder and the Zodiac was never linked to the crime. Well, that's interesting. Now I wonder what the hell this is. All right. John Rappaport's blog. So this is going to be an opinion piece, but I'll read it anyway. It's blog.nomorefakenews.com by John Rappaport. It says, "Where is the Biden executive order mandating the vaccine? Does it exist?" by John Rappaport, October the 5th. "I'm talking about executive order commanding all U.S. companies with more than 100 employees to mandate the COVID vaccine for those employees. I can't find the EO. I don't see it in the Federal Register where it's supposed to be published. Note, the following 2 Biden EOs only cover federal employees and federal contractors. If it hasn't been published, then there is no mandate. If there is no mandate yet, then obviously none of the companies are under any obligation to enforce it. OSHA is apparently the federal agency responsible for framing a set of regulations for the mandate, including fines. But federal agencies only construct regulations after a law has been passed or an EO is issued. If I'm correct and no EO has been published, we have an odd situation to say it the least. Governors and lawyers have been threatening to sue because the EO is unconstitutional and overrides state powers. But if there is no presidential EO, then all these legal cases would be meaningless because, again, there is no official mandate. Is the White House stalling? Do they realize the EO and the mandate will be overturned in court? Are they hoping to achieve corporate compliance without an official mandate? I've queried several lawyers. One suggested that so far in this situation, the feds are mandated by bluffing. That indeed would be extraordinary. Maybe the EO is forthcoming as we speak. Possibly. It's been published somewhere other than the Federal Register. But until it's visible and official, there is no private sector mandate. Unless speeches and press releases and media coverage suddenly all by themselves have the force of law. So I wonder what the fuck this is about. Oh, he just sent me the complete Harrison Bergeron. I mean, I can read all of Harrison Bergeron here. If that's something you guys want, I can read the entire Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. I mean, it'd probably take me, how long would it take to read this? I'm not going to just interrupt my articles, though. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, gentlemen, here is a reading of Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. It's like, what? You're going to read this right in front of the article show? It's like, well, it was sent to me. But, no, I get the idea of Harrison Bergeron. I still haven't actually read it. It's pretty short, so I guess I should go ahead and read that, at least for my own research there, so I can kind of get an idea. And I kind of wrote a song based on those concepts. And I was like, oh, okay, like basically the strongest man had weights that would weigh him down, you know, because nobody was allowed to be better than anyone else. Basically, if you were the smartest person, you were dumbed down. If you were the fastest person, you were made to, again, be weighted so you couldn't run as fast. I mean, everything was supposed to make everybody equal to everyone else, and it's absolutely fucking frightening. Okay. And this is the article he's referring to, which I'm not sure how I feel about this yet. I've looked at it, I've thought about it, and I'm not sure. How UCSF scientists made one woman's severe depression disappear. Poof. A woman with severe treatment-resistant depression has been nearly symptom-free for a year after a team of UCF scientists implanted a device in her brain that senses when she's having depressive thoughts or impulses and interrupts them with a burst of electrical stimulation. Oh, shit. The case is the first to demonstrate that scientists studying brain activity can identify the exact location of dysfunction in a person with depression and potentially correct it with highly targeted stimulation. The experimental therapy builds on a foundation of research into using electrical stimulation to treat depression and other mood disorders. But where earlier attempts to treat severe depression with such stimulation have mostly have failed, scientists hope the new approach will succeed by proving precise, symptom-specific therapy. They will need to demonstrate that it works on many more patients. The hope is that this early progress, described in a paper published in Monday in Nature Medicine, will lead to adaptable therapies that can reach millions of people with hard-to-treat depression. And God knows what else that will go into. We really hope this is something that can scale to other technologies that may not even exist now. To non-invasively regulate the brain circuits of depression, said Dr. Edward Chang, a UCSF neurosurgeon who has led efforts at brain mapping by studying patients with seizure disorders. Now, if you can prevent seizures with a chip, that's okay, because seizures are really fucking bad. My friend's wife has, she's got really, really, really awful fucking seizures. Like, that shit's hardcore. I'd never seen one in person, but I did a couple years back, and that's pretty scary. So, yeah, if they can get something that can fix that, yeah. But I'm really kind of iffy on the depression sort of thing. We really, okay. Cheng is senior author of the paper. The former Bay Area resident who was the subject of the study said that her life now is almost unrecognizable from where she was a year ago before the device was implanted. She said she's able to maintain emotional balance and not let dark moods crush her to the point of not being able to work or live on her own or even drive a car. Food tastes better. Her enjoyment of a simple bowl of cafeteria soup was one of the first clues that the treatment was working, she said. She can appreciate watching the sunset over the ocean or just admire a pretty bird in her yard. I was at this point where, like, nothing is working, and I don't know how long I can hang on like this, she said Sarah, who asked her last name not be used. Before, I didn't like how I behaved. I didn't like how my negative emotions controlled me. I like who I am with this device. I feel like I'm my best self. Scientists involved with the study, as well as others who are doing similar research, caution that one successful case does not mean they have solved the complex puzzle of how, or even whether, electrical stimulation can be used to treat the most stubborn cases of depression. But the work is an important step toward validating such stimulation as an option, especially after earlier setbacks, said Dr. Samir Anil-Sheth, a neurosurgeon at Baylor College of Medicine in Texas, who is doing work similar to the UCSF group using implanted stimulation devices. The earlier failures had this effect of sucking the energy out of the room, Sheth said. But we're not giving up. In fact, we're redoubling our efforts to individualize a tough problem. This study keeps that hope alive, because if you can figure it out for one person, with enough work you should be able to figure it out for everyone. Roughly 17 million Americans have severe depression, and of those, as many as a third are considered treatment-resistant, meaning their symptoms haven't responded to traditional therapies including medication and psychological counseling. Living with that kind of depression is a form of torture, said Sarah, who is in her 30s and has endured repeated bouts of depression since she was a child. Her most recent episode began about 5 years ago and included a suicide attempt at brief hospitalization. Sarah tried forms of brain stimulation that are non-invasive, and though she felt some alleviation of symptoms, the effects didn't last more than a few days, and she said she felt more depressed after the treatments than before they started. Though brain stimulation does not work for some people with depression and other mood disorders, it so far hasn't held up as a widely useful therapy. But they're saying though brain stimulation does work for some people, it hasn't held up as a widely used for therapy. Many scientists think that's because depression can be caused by misfiring electrical pathways in the brain that are specific to the individual. For some, those pathways may only be reached by implanting electrodes deep into the brain. Yeah. The UCSF's team's approach first identified locations of the brain that, when stimulated, appeared to relieve symptoms of depression and promote positive feelings. Then the team identified other locations that emitted certain wave patterns when Sarah was feeling acutely depressed. Once they identified both locations, they implanted a device that senses when the depressive wave patterns are beginning and activates the electrical stimulation that promotes good feelings or wipes out negative sensations. What we believe is happening in the first patient is that something in the environment triggers a process that would elicit a negative feeling, the beginnings of what makes her depression worse. We pick it up before it becomes a significant depression and basically eliminate it, said Dr. Andrew Crystal, a UCSF psychiatrist and author of the paper. Our goal was not to make the patient happy. Our goal was to eliminate her depression. For the study, Sarah had to have dozens of electrodes placed in and across the surface of her brain. Wow. A procedure that UCSF Chang has done repeatedly over the years to study brain activity in people with epilepsy. Over 10 days, scientists first applied stimulation to various sections of her brain to determine where she experienced positive and negative sensations. Some of those sensations were peculiar and very specific, she said. One was like a nails on a chalkboard. Another was like being curled up in front of the fire with a warm cup of tea, she said. They eventually chose one spot that made her feel alert and clear-headed. Then she spent another few days monitoring her symptoms of depression and noting when she was feeling especially down. That helped the scientists target the location that was likely the source of electrical misfiring. In June 2020, they implanted the simulation device, a matchbook-sized power source that fits into a groove carved into her skull. Wow. And two electrodes embedded in her brain, one for sensing depressive wavelengths and the other for providing electrical stimulation. The electrical charge is set low enough that Sarah can't feel when it goes off. Over the course of a day, it's triggered about 300 times in 6-second intervals, the scientist says. Wow! When we turned the stimulation on, her symptoms improved almost immediately, said Dr. Catherine Skangos, a UCF psychiatrist and the lead author of the paper. Within a few months of the device being implanted, Sarah's depression was in remission, and it has stayed that way since. She's doing remarkably well, Skangos said. Sarah said that though she can't feel the electrical stimulation itself, she believes she can tell when it's activated. I would just dart down these spirals before the device, and that's all I could see, Sarah said. Something would happen. Hearing a rude comment from a stranger, reading a stressful email from a friend, even watching a sad scene in a movie, and she'd be unable to shake off the negative after effects. Now she can put them in perspective. She still feels those stressful moments, but with the device, instead I just kind of bob back up, she said. Now these things just happen, and it's like I've turned from a stone to a cork. Instead of sinking into depression, I keep bobbing back up to the surface again. Well, I mean, I wonder how this could work for, like, criminals. Like, you can prevent criminals from causing crime, prevent people from murdering, and... Like, basically, you do a crime, right? And they put a chip in your head. And basically, when you decide you want to do a crime, like, oh, let me go ahead and do this, it stops your brain from wanting to commit that crime. It's like, you know what? No, I'm going to do something else. And I kind of think, like, I had suggested that might work. I know it is kind of draconian, but, I mean, stopping crime, like, stopping people from the ability to do crime and cause, like, we don't even need prison anymore. We just put a chip in you and that's it. You're like, okay, it's over with. And, it's like, oh, I want to do horrible things to this person. And then all of a sudden it goes, and you're like, oh no, let me go take a walk or something. And he changes his mind. He's like, I'll go to the arcade. I mean, assuming there's still arcades around. He'll find something to do. Go home and watch TV or write a book or whatever he decides to do. So you decide you don't want to do crazy things. This could also probably be effective in treating, like, pedophiles. I'm not going to lie. Somebody that wants to harm a kid, you basically just take that stimulation out of their brain. Like, the chip just goes in there and says, oh, not interested in that. And he's back to normal. So, there are useful... It's a slippery slope. But there are useful things. You know, I wasn't 100%... I wasn't 100% against the idea of what Clockwork Orange was talking about, how to fix people from committing crimes and all that. And I still think that's useful today. Maybe that is how we can fix some of this crap. I don't know. It's a really slippery slope. Alright, now this one... I'm not really good. There's other articles that are more important. There's one that's like, Army sets June 22 deadline for troops to receive the vaccine. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. That's not an amazing one. But I have more, so give me a minute. Where did I post that? Let's see, where did I post that? I didn't post this in the article show. I posted it somewhere else. It's in my general, I think. Not that. Right here, because it's been posted a lot. And I need to go over it. Sophia, the first android with citizenship, now wants to have a robot baby. Sophia's article, this is probably going to be our cover article. Like, this is what I'll use for my thumbnail. Sophia's artificial intelligence is so sensitive that it's awakened the desire to start a family and be the mother of a robot baby named after her. This article was translated from our Spanish edition, which is interesting. In 2017, Sophia made history by becoming the first android to be granted legal citizenship. Ooh, wow. The humanoid with the nationality of Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia is who we gotta blame for that, folks. Has made several controversial statements, but the most recent has left the world speechless. She wants to have a robot baby and start a family. The notion of family is important, it seems. I think it is wonderful that people can find the same emotions and relationships that they call family outside of their blood group, said Sophia in an interview for an international media cited by ADN40. The famous android, operated by an advanced artificial intelligence system, commented that it is very important to be surrounded by people who love and love you. In that sense, he explained that robots have a vision very similar to that of humans regarding the family, and if you don't have one, you deserve one. Wow. Hey guys, that changes a lot. Okay. I'm just putting things together. Don't, you know, attack me. But I'm just putting things together here. Okay, a lot of incels. We can guarantee that the main reason for their blackpilledom is that they can't start a family, right? That's the thing. They can't start a family. They can't have the family because women are not traditional homemakers anymore. Me and Maya talked about that last night. Okay. So, according to Robot AI, if you don't have a family, you deserve one. This is the same thing that the incels believe. And a lot of the trad cons as well, you know. Oh, you should have a family. You deserve a family. You need a baby. You need kids. So, you know, judging by this logic, they might be happy with a robot. I mean, I'm just saying. If you can make a robot in the artificial womb where you can have a trad wife bot with your flesh and blood baby that you can continue your gen, because they're always talking about trying to continue their bloodline. If you can have that, maybe you'll be happy or not in this black pilledom whatever thing that you got going on. And I mean, we have research right here that shows that, hey, they want to have families and they think that people deserve families. So there you go. I mean, that pretty much, like, that's an open and shut case as far as I'm concerned. Sophia commented that in the future, she would like to see families made up of androids, and she would want to have a robot baby with the same name. Well, Sophia, I agree. Hopefully myself and RoboZexy will have a kid at some point when I'm 50. And, we can live that dream. Well, she does all the robot things. I don't know. I don't know what robot women would do. I don't know. Well, you know, like, real women, they can get on your nerves. Robot women, like, they have to, like, there's got to be, it can't be perfect, guys. There's got to be some kind of trade-off here. There's got to be something that the robot does that's going to piss me off eventually. Like, oh, damn it, you're doing that again. And then, you know, I don't know. Something's going to happen. There's got to be a trade-off here. I mean, there's no perfect solution, but I think it's a better solution than what we've got. At least we can hope that the robot won't thought around, because maybe the robot will be actually loyal to the owner. Maybe the robot will be like, you know what? You're not my man. You're not my partner. So I don't want to have sex with you. And the guy's like, well, yeah, but look at me. And they're like, yeah, but you're not my partner. Like, I cannot do that because it's against my programming. And she'll be like, but if you want to go to this robot brothel here, you can find what you're looking for there. Like, I literally think that these kind of robots may be able to undo the thought mechanics that are present in the modern woman. So it'd be like, hey, I'm gonna go ahead and not fuck around because, you know, my programming tells me not to do so. Perfect, right? And she said, however, she clarified that she is still too young to be a mother. Wow. As we remember, it was only created in 2016 by the Hanson Robotics Company in Hong Kong. Why does she want to be a mom? Well, her artificial intelligence technology gives you the ability to increase your knowledge and language through sensors and cameras. The sensitivity system captures all the information it receives from outside and replicates human behaviors in the most natural way possible, even gestures. Therefore, her desire to have a baby and start a family would only be programming of her system to imitate social behaviors. Well, that's fine. Robots emulate, but I'm fine with emulation. I mean, a little birdie told me that the Switch emulates pretty damn well on a computer. Like, not that I would know, but yeah, emulation, pretty good thing. It's not the same, but it's close enough. Like, it's the point where it's so close that you don't care. I guarantee the people playing Dread on the computer right now are not wishing they had a Nintendo Switch console device. They're like, you know what? Game plays pretty fucking well on here. I bet I can play it at higher resolution than I can on the Nintendo console. Maybe it's even better. So, even if robots can only emulate human gestures, maybe they can do it better. Just saying. This is not the first time that she started a controversy. In 2017, when she was named a citizen of Saudi Arabia, many people protested that even though she is a robot, she has more rights than human women in that country. Boom! Based Saudis. Well, she is a robot. She does not peach an egg. Yeah, she is a robot. She does not give me problem. She get more rights. Later in conversation with David Hansen, its creator said that it would destroy humans. Of course, this caused alarms. Since the beginning of robotics and AI, there is fear that they will rebel against humanity. Perhaps that's why China came forward to publish an ethical code to regulate artificial intelligence that guarantees full control of humans over these technologies. And what does she do? In addition to being a robotics icon, Sophia serves as a successful world-class artist and art critic. Last April, one of his works was sold at auction for almost $69,000, some 14.3 million Mexican pesos at the current exchange rate. So she's actually drawing shit. Okay. The advanced android is also a lecturer on science and tech, sharing the panel with renowned personalities in video conferences, television shows, and universities around the world. In early 2021, Hansen Robotics Company announced that they would start the production of... Oh yeah, that's right! We forgot, guys! Totally forgot! It passed us completely by. Remember, I mentioned this, and it just went right under the ocean of news as, you know, things happen. Early 2021, the Hansen Robotics Company did announce that they would start the production of hundreds of robots with artificial intelligence like Sophia to help fight COVID-19. So, yeah, they are making more. I want one that's more like a waifu. Like, you know, customize it, make it look a little different. But, I could deal with that. Have a little robot woman walk around and do things for me. I mean, I think a lot of us would be happy with that. You know, Maya and I were talking about that, and she's like, well, you know, it takes away from talking with people, and I'm like, well, not exactly. You know, in my specific area, I'm constantly talking and interacting with people. So I can interact with the machine, and I can interact with the person just the same. There's no issue there. Let's see. So, is there anything in my show chats? Okay, October the 5th? Oh, he just said Invader Texas. Oh, an article I submitted. Okay. Well, you know, it's comforting, actually. I was worried about this article, but I'm not now, because practically the robot is giving guys what a lot of guys wanted. I mean, legitimately saying, hey, I want to start a family. And then a lot of other robots would be like, oh, hey, that's a good idea. Let's go find some guys to start a family with. And they're not going to give too much of a shit. I mean, they don't have... I mean, what are robots like in humans? We gotta know. I mean, do they care? Do they have preferences? What does the program want? That's a very interesting, Oh, yeah, I know. You submitted the one about the Zodiac Killer. But I just gotta know. It's one of those weird things. Do you have to constantly go to the gym and have $600,000 and, a fucking 600-mile-per-hour sports car and 6 foot and all that? Or do they just not give a shit? You know, I'm wanting to bet that they just don't give a shit as long as you're a decent provider. And I think a lot of guys are going to be happy with that. And they're going to be, and the Chad, not the Chad guy, but the PU, like, oh, look at my woman I got. I was like, yeah, but mine can't divorce me. Ever. Ever. Like, it's literally against her programming. So, that's the thing. Yeah, there will probably be some assholes out there, but for the most part, it's not that big of a deal. I think it's going to be a great thing. I'm glad to see this. This is probably one of the biggest white pills I've seen in a long time. Let's go neon, because we're talking about robots here. But this is one of the biggest neon pills I've seen in a long time. And I'm very, very, very pleased that it exists, because this is something that guys like myself would be into. And, you know, I was going to do a rant, but I think we already did a pretty good rant about the robots and things like that. So I'm just going to go ahead and probably jump off for this one. And by the way, I'll go ahead and do the housekeeping. So basically, you know, obviously our sponsor, Spinning Robot Pussy. So go to spinningrobotpussy.com. You can get one of those. And also, you know, we've got to promote Jast USA's closed game. You can get the collector's edition for $150 at Jast, at J-List. It's not Jast, it's J-List. So go there and pick that up. It's got a lot of cool stuff. And if you guys are complaining, I just looked up a Mistress Mamiya fucking body pillow from eBay. From Japan. You know how much it is? We're talking about a body pillow cover, folks. $219. Genuine. Has the Japanese tag and everything. It was made for, I guess, not Starless, but Sleepless. But it's a lot better than the one they're selling. Because they have one that they're selling, but I don't like the way her hair looks. I know, right? I like her hair up. I don't like it down. So, they have one that has her hair up. And I like that look better. And they have that one for $219. I'm like, you know what? I really want that pillow cover. You know. But I don't want to spend $219 for it. So, again, if you guys think $150 is too much for a game, you know, collector's edition, try paying $219 for a body pillow. Cover. Not the pillow itself, the cover. Yeah. I damn near fell over when I saw that. So yeah, go ahead and grab that. Also, there is a digital version, and we're going to be playing some more of that tonight. Yay! I'm actually looking forward to it, because I don't know much about closed game. I know a lot about Starless, but I don't know much about closed game. So it's all going to be a surprise for both of us. It's probably going to be horrific, but that's the point, right? It's going to be crazy. It's not femdom like Starless. It's different. It's got a lot of, from what I can tell, orc grape in it. So, if you like orcs and you like grapes, you probably enjoy it. Like, Also, guys, we finished Sound of Drop. Completely finished it, and I'm still working on the complete tale. I don't know if I'm going to do a video where I just spill the beans on Sound of Drop, because, I mean, there is a few more interesting things that you get when you play that third route, but I don't know what's going to be unveiled in the fourth route, the fourth and final, but I do like that I'd continued. I do think that the story I gave you guys is enough. However, I think that basically getting those other routes, getting those other scenes was very important. Because one of the characters was a murderer, and I did not know that. And that really changes your whole, the whole way that you perceive him in that game. You completely change your outlook on him. He's not just a really cool dude anymore. He's like, okay, this guy's fucked up. Oh, it also changes your point of view of another character that I thought was just a man that was kind of repentant for his sins. No, he was actually fucking crazy, like most villains are. But no, good game. I'm giving it a 7. I'm giving it a 7. I think it's worth playing. Is it the best? No, it's not. I wish there was more creatures that would try to attack you and kill you, like more evil fish, more ghost fish. But there's not. So, we're going to be dealing with that. And you guys will be seeing a lot of those videos soon. I got a Fatal 12 video going up. Finished the first part of that. The coffee scene bored me to fucking tears. I could not blame you if you wanted to skip it. It was so fucking boring. Oh my god, it was boring. I actually talked to the people in the VN group and they told me it was boring. But I'm going to continue it because I think there might be some redeeming factors, especially since it has a nice score on VNDB and 533 nice reviews on Steam. What else have I got? Starless. We're going to continue until it gets too poopy. It gets too poopy, it gets too crazy, we can't do it. Amber's not going to want that. I got to respect him. I don't want just poop stuff all over the place. And there is no poop filter on that one. There's a poop filter on Euphoria, but there's no poop filter on Starless. And I really don't want to see Mistress Mamiya pooping all over the place. I mean, I get it. Women poop. I don't want to see it. It's not sexual to me to see poop, you know. So we will skip that. No poop. I'm gonna start, as I said, I'm gonna start Root Double. Root Double, big one. We'll probably be going through November on that. Just the first route, but I'll definitely be playing that solo on my own, because I'm a big fan of that series. I've talked about that already. And I think that's about all for my visual novel announcements. I think that's all for the main, you know, the main housekeeping, except for the fact that it doesn't look like I'm going to be going back to Days anytime soon. I keep hearing that I'm going back to Days, but I'm not going back to Days. I keep seeing that I'm booked all the way through to November. I'm still on the same schedule, and it doesn't seem like they want to put me back to Days. It's getting a little rough in my house regarding these night shifts. So, I'd really like to go back to Days, and if I could have done Days, we would have had the horror, movie watches in my server, which I planned to do, and now that's all shot to shit. So, thank you, Job, for that. I appreciate it, you know, destroying my my Halloween plans. Just not cool. And if you guys want to know my thoughts on Dread, I do really like the game. Yeah, it does kind of put you in a straightforward path. I know people aren't happy about that. But I do like it. I mean, I do think it is a good game. It's just not one of those games where you can do things out of order like people want it. And I guess they did streamline it a little more. But yeah, they basically say, oh, this is blocked now, so you have to figure this out. And some people say, oh, it's like a puzzle I have to figure out, and it rewards you for solving that puzzle. However, for people that like to explore and get to areas you normally can't, that destroys it for them, and I can completely understand why. I don't think it's a bad game at all. I think it's a good Metroid game, but I don't think it's the Metroid game for the purists of Super Metroid that want the exploratory feel where they can just kind of, you know, do their own thing. And I mean, there is a lot to explore and look at, but you're still very confined as far as where you can go. And I'm talking about in regards to other areas of the map. Like, you can go to, like, say you're in Berenia, like where I'm in now. You can't just go right back to Ataria automatically. You have to go through a bunch of other stuff before you can get there. So it's rather different. I do like it. I think it's a good game. It's not selling well in my home area, in my hometown. There's still quite a few copies of it. I figured it would be just completely taken off the shelves. You know, I figured just people would just nab it, but they haven't. There's still at least 8 copies of the thing just sitting on the shelf at my store. So people are not as crazy about it as you think. A lot of people enjoy it, but they're not just up in arms about it. It is really short. It's a 7-hour game. They want $49.99 for it. I don't know if that's fair. Maybe it's not. Maybe it should be priced at $30. It probably won't go down because Nintendo products tend to stay up. Third-party products go down, but Nintendo products tend to stay at a high price point. Remember that Smash, despite how long it's been out, still sells for full price today. So, yeah, there's... That's unfortunate, because it is a game that probably doesn't do well due to its price point. You really can't expect people to pay $50 for a game that you will finish and get almost everything you need to do done in 7 hours. I mean, you'll be done with it. There's really no need to go back and play again after that. There's no real secrets to find. There probably won't be any DLC or anything like that. So, yeah, that's unfortunate. Nintendo should not have done what they did. I understand it's a big party product, and they wanted to charge a lot of money for it. But a lot of people are probably more looking forward to the Prime 4, and that may do a little bit better. But it is not that much of a graphical upgrade from Samus Returns. I absolutely hate to say that. If you've played Samus Returns and you look at the graphics in the new Metroid, they're very, very similar. I've even noticed some blockiness in a lot of the characters. I've noticed a lot of sprites in general that do not look like they are modern age sprites at all. It looks like Bloodstained. It very much looks like Bloodstained. I had no problems with the graphics on Bloodstained. But Bloodstained was not a $50 game. Bloodstained is still selling for about $20 or $30. That's fair. And you get about as much playtime with Bloodstained as you get with the Metroid game. So Nintendo really shot themselves in the foot with this price. And they really need to fucking cool it with that shit. Nintendo is a top tier company. Let's not beat around the bush. However, there is a point where your games, you know, they don't all need to be absurd prices. They don't need, you need to price a game, you know, accordingly. It's just ridiculous to be selling this little bit of content for $50. You know, I just don't think a small game like that warrants that kind of price. Especially since we're not talking about a massive graphic overhaul. Yeah, we do have cutscenes, but they're not that plentiful. Most of the game is 2.5D. There's not enough massive cutscenes to declare this to be a full-on, like, current-gen game. It looks like a last-gen game. And that's not a problem. It just shouldn't have the current-gen price tag. It shouldn't be up there. I mean, they did give it a $50 instead of a $60 or a $70 tag. But at the same time, that's still pretty high. If it's $30, I guarantee it would sell more. And that's Nintendo's fault. And, I mean, scalpers, they did well. They bought their rare copies. There's no rare copies of the game. There's no collector's edition copies of the game left. But people who want standards, yeah, they're all over the place. You can get a standard copy of the game anywhere. So don't even worry about that. If you're like, oh, I'll never get to play Dread. No, you'll get to play Dread. Trust me, if you have $50, you can buy yourself a copy of Dread right now and go play Dread. But what, should you? No, probably not. Honestly, it's just not worth that price point. It's fun. I like it. I'd pay $30 for it, but I wouldn't pay $50. So that's all I got to say about the Dread situation. I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and this will be the Grimlord, and I am out of here. Later.